go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest episodes from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Master Jedi Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
We're finally here to the season finale of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah, yes, we are. I bet you're relieved that we don't have to use CBS All Access anymore.
Yes, I am so sick of the CBS All Access app. I mean, I know we've covered this in previous episodes, but I'm tired of all of its flaws. Freaking CBS and Viacom need to get their shit together so they can put out a quality app.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that too earlier today when I was smoking. I was just thinking, like, they're not setting themselves up for success by putting out a show that you can only watch on the CBS All Access app that you have to pay for, and yet you still have commercials for. So it's like, it doesn't seem like you're setting yourself up for success.
Yeah, I mean, you still have commercials. Like, there were several times today, I did watch the episode twice, but there were several times coming out of commercial where the app would freeze, and I'm watching it on my smart TV. So I would sit there for like a minute, and then it's just frozen on the last shot of the ad, just stuck there. So I'd have to close out of the app and restart it. And it was getting on my nerves.
Well, maybe you just have shitty internet.
I mean, I don't have problems, you know, when I watch Hulu with ads. I don't have problems when I watch Netflix or Disney Plus or Amazon Prime. CBS All Access is the only app on my TV that gives me problems.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's also the newest app, and CBS isn't that big of a network, so...
It is not the newest app.
Well, yeah, but you're comparing it to Disney, where Disney's like a bajillion times the size of CBS All Access.
True, but still, I mean,
so they could have, maybe CBS just can't afford the high quality modems, or what is it?
You're saying they don't have this, you know, they can't afford the server capacity it's required to.
Yes, thank you.
To process that, but I don't think, I mean, it's not like there's not a lot of new shows out right now on CBS All Access, and it's not like millions and millions of people are flooding the app to download it. I don't see it being a server problem. I just see it being flaws within the app. I think they
code, maybe a coding issue, or
yeah, just... maybe if what they do is bump down the ad free price, like $1 a month, bump it down, and then just get rid of the commercial app, or yeah, the subscription, yeah, with the commercials. Because I'm just...
Because how much is it with the... It's like, what, $12.99 a month without... Or with the ads?
No, with ads. How much is it with ads? It's like $7 a month or something.
Yeah, that's still... How much is it without the ads?
I don't know. I don't have it without the ads. I imagine it's like $4 or $5 more a month.
I mean, it's just...
It's out of hand. And now, you know, I mean, it's not even with Picard. So I was trying to watch another show where... It won't even freaking... Maybe it is. I don't know. I was trying to watch an episode of something else and it wouldn't even load the first episode. So it's like, I don't know what the hell it is. Maybe they need a software patch or something. But
I kind of agree. Like, I've had noticed problems when pulling up the episodes and kind of navigating that way. You know, it tends to... It's just a little bit complicated when trying to restart episodes, rewatch things, pull up episodes, go to different episode listings. It just seems not as simple as Netflix or Hulu when it comes to navigating its app. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't know. I just think they have some things to work on. The maybe iPhone or Android versions might be better than the smart TV versions. But, you know, I don't want to watch shows like this on my 6-inch phone. I want to watch it on my 65-inch TV.
Yeah, I feel it. All right, well, I think that's enough ranting for one day. Why don't we actually go ahead and get started with this episode?
You can do it! You can do it all night long! Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
All right, well, what do we have in store for today, Steven?
Today's episode is, obviously, Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 10, The Finale. That's not the name of it, it's named. I still want to say E.T. in Arcadia Ego Part 2, but I think it's Et in Arcadia Ego Part 2.
Maybe it's Ego, like the planet Ego, like from Guardians of the Galaxy. Et in Arcadia Ego.
It probably is Ego, but I was going with an accent when I said Et, so I went with Ego.
Ego. Lego my Egos.
Match. I know, right?
Part 2, yes. But we are finally in the last episode of Star Trek Picard.
Yes. And today's episode, or this episode, starts with a nice exterior shot of the cube. You get a real, real crisp detail on a Borg cube, or, you know, how you see it from the outside. You see some damage, you kind of just, you get a good shot of it before jumping inside and catching Narek sneaking back onto the cube.
Yeah, but I mean, Elnor and Seven are kind of having a conversation about the XBs, and Seven's not doing so well. She's pondering, like, oh, maybe I'd be better off than they were. And then, you know, Elnor being the open and honest kind of guy he is, he's like, but I'd miss you. That's okay. I'd miss Seven, too. I wouldn't blame him.
Yeah.
While they're having that heart-to-heart, Narek runs into his sister. Well, sort of runs in. She almost kills him, but I guess that's close enough.
It's more of, you know, his sister sneaks up on him, puts a knife through his throat, realizes it's him, and then is like, oh, it's good to see you again, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you get that. This first 10 or 15 minutes of the episode is kind of, you get a lot of quick, informative scenes, kind of like similar to the last few episodes, I think. The scenes are a little longer than they have been in the last couple episodes, but you do get some very important information within them.
Right. Well, I mean, it's the last episode, so we should be getting kind of that wrap up of ending a lot of different storylines, setting up storylines for season 2, you know, things to watch out. So kind of makes sense that they're going to be a bit more informative.
Yeah. And in this scene where Rizzo and Narek are talking, you kind of, you know, and this scene kind of is broken up into two parts. Part of it is before the introductionary song, and part of it's after, where you find out, you know, their parents were involved with this mission. First of all, you find out that they are actual siblings. It's not how I mentioned it a couple episodes back, where they could be just calling each other brother and sister because they're a part of the same organization. Nope, not the case. Literal siblings, shared the same.
Well, that one lady, that the crazy one that got assimilated, the redhead Romulan, mm-hmm. that she went on the initiation with, that was mm-hmm. her aunt, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does kind of make sense that they're all related and it's kind of stayed in the family.
Yeah, but you find out here that Narek has always kind of been considered the black sheep and the loser of the family, but yet he was able to succeed in the mission in finding out where Soji's, you know, homeworld is and where they need to be in order to destroy it and stop this end-all, be-all of all biological life forms.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Well,
the black sheep comes through.
Yeah. Well, good. It's good for anybody who feels like they're the runt of the family. Is that kind of how it is? Even if you feel like you're the runt of the family, you can still contribute.
No, runt of the family is just small. This is the black sheep of the family.
Is it? Is that what runt means? That they're just the smallest? I thought it was like, I didn't know.
Yeah, runt's the smallest.
Well, was he the smallest?
Maybe. But it's still like the black sheep, the one who's, you know, doesn't, he's kind of the outlier. He's the not, he's the most different between, and for the family. Maybe doesn't play by the rules, maybe just does things his own way and doesn't really follow family beliefs, but yeah.
Kind of the outsider in the family.
Yeah. Yeah, the black sheep, because, you know, it's the black sheep who gets left behind.
Why? It would be so easy to find him amongst all the white sheep. I'm just saying. Well, maybe I'm just overanalyzing it.
Yes, you are definitely overanalyzing it. after you get this nice Rizzo and I won't say no. After you get this Rizzo and Eric scene, you jump back to the La Serena. And in the last episode, one of the android ladies gives Rafi this tool and tells her, hey, use your imagination and it could do whatever you want type tool, which is, I don't understand the logic or the science behind this at all, but okay.
I think I kind of understand the logic and science behind it. And do you remember in the last episode when you were, or I guess we both were curious how... I don't remember what her name was, but the android was able to do the mind meld.
Yeah.
I can't remember. The actress who plays her has done four different androids, so it's hard to remember all their names. But it was the one that betrayed him and released Narek to begin with. So we were curious how they were able to do the mind meld. Maybe that's kind of how, because that tool, it almost seems like they use their mind to basically act as the computer's mind in a replicator. So you know how you tell the computer, I want something in a replicator, and it creates it. Well, instead of doing it with the computer, it just directly, whatever you're thinking, that's what it does, and it converts the energy to make whatever you want.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where, and then just the technology is just to develop to where your mind can make this shit rather than, you know, just the computer doing it and pre-programmed shit.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that can make
that's
sense.
That's kind of what I was thinking of.
It's just a little weird. It was just like, oh, okay, okay. It was one of those things when that scene came across, because it just, like, oh, magic tool that fixes anything. Here, how can we repair the ship and do the least possible explanation? Hey, what if we have this magic tool that'll fix anything and everything? Okay, let's go with that. Boop.
Yeah, I know, right?
Don't know why I threw my pencil across the table, but that's just how I felt about the situation, and I felt like that was a good representation of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Star Trek has traditionally been the use pseudoscience to explain shit, to where it just sounds kind of scientific and has a plausible explanation. They kind of ignored that with this, and it does kind of seem more magic, but, yeah. You know, when... almost when you think about it, it could make sense if they had explained the science. You know what I mean?
Could have. Yeah, because the way Rafi explained it is, just imagine it's fixed and it's going to be fixed. Okay. Yeah. I imagine I'm 6'5" with a 10-inch dong, but
it's okay. Definitely not going to happen.
So they fix the ship and, you know, Narek has already at this point left the cube and has actually went to their crash ship so that they can recruit them so they could all team up and contribute to stopping the synth gods that are coming to destroy the universe. He does it by throwing rocks at the front of the ship. And Rios is like, I know that sound. It's like, you have just people throwing rocks at your ship all the time to where you're super familiar with that sound?
I guess so.
Was he like in a, you know, Love in Space type scenario where someone's just chunking rocks at his windshield all the time?
It took me a second there to get that, but again, then again, that was before my time. But anyways, but I get the point, you know, where does that come from? Maybe because rocks, well, I was going to say maybe because rocks hit the ships as he's flying through space and he recognizes the sound, but that's what his deflector dish is for, to prevent that. So,
see, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know either.
I liked Rios' nickname for Narek, the snakehead. I don't know why, but it just seemed kind of fitting.
I didn't even get it. He called him a snakehead, and I was like, okay. It's probably an insulty nickname, but I don't quite understand it.
Green blood, pointed ears, maybe. Romulans are kind of considered snakes, you know.
Could be. Goofy little motherfucker.
I don't know why. But I laughed when he said it. I'm like, I don't know why that's funny, but it's funny.
It was funny.
So.
It was funny, yeah. And then you get it, you know, after that, you get a nice joke where Rio says, I would like to see what kind of damage a photon torpedo can do at this range.
I like how much shade's being thrown.
There's a lot of shade being thrown, because Rafi even says something. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but she says something about, but I don't remember what.
I don't know. I'm beginning to question which one of us is stoned.
You.
Yeah, you're forgetting shit too.
Well, I just, you know, I took, I won't say half-ass notes, but very broad notes. I mean, I was going to say let's jump to the next scene, but I really didn't care for the next scene. It was just a brief filler scene with Girardi and Dr. Yeah, Soon.
It kind of, I think it was supposed to say, hey, I'm not actually a traitor, I'm on your side, I'm secretly, you know, on your side, blah, blah, blah. It was just that, oh, all of a sudden you were for them, now you're for us, you know, kind of prevent that sudden transition.
Yeah, because he calls her their mother again, and there's a lot of, not a lot of reference, there's references in the last episode, there's references of the start of this episode where Girardi's a mother-like thing because she worked on the project with Maddox, and now, you know, Maddox and Soon teamed up, so it's kind of like having a motherish figure.
Right.
And then Girardi's all like, when she walks out, or when Soon walks out, it's like, I'm not their mother, you motherfucking son of a cock-sucking bitch. She didn't say those exact words. That's kind of how I interpreted.
It.
Yeah, that's my paraphrasing interpretation of Girardi.
Yeah, I mean, she was not having it. So,
no, and that was the only thing worth noting in that scene, and it was something that I imagined in my head. So,
well, all right, then we'll just kind of skip past that one, and
Yeah, the next scene's a really important scene. You kind of get an understanding of the Romulan beliefs, and I'll throw up air quotes saying mythology with the Gamondadon.
Yeah, I can't say it either. I'm not even going to attempt it. But Gamandon? I mean,
whatever.
The idea of it being history. You know, they go on to that assumption. I think Rios was talking about how it's like their Ragnarok.
How do you feel about Gamadan? Because if we waste any more time fighting each other, we will all die, and then whether or not you like me will matter even less.
Well, oh, hold on. What is Gamadan? What is the story?
It's just that. A story.
A story of the end.
Of?
Everything. Like Ragnarok or Judgment Day. An ancient myth.
And I feel like, one, the only reason anybody today would know what Ragnarok is because of Thor Ragnarok, the movie. That's the only reason anybody today would know it. Just pointing it out there.
I would say only reason. I'm pretty sure some Scandinavian and...
Well, it's common household. Like, commonly known in the household nowadays.
Could be, yeah.
But it's an interesting perspective because it's definitely plausible, you know, scientifically speaking, that the civilization grew to such an advanced level that existed for millions of years ago and could have wiped out all alien life that was known in, or biological life in the universe. And then it would take millions of years for new, or hundreds of million years for new biology to emerge or new biological life to emerge and to grow and evolve. So it is a plausible scenario that this could be history and that the last remnants of the history was gone and it's just told in the folklore.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yes, and I think from the Romulan perspective, it is seen as history and it's seen as fact. This actually happened. And
I mean, you really believe this is a prophecy?
No, I believe it's history. And the fascinating thing about history is it always repeats itself.
You know, from an outsider perspective, it's seen as folklore or mythology, like, you know, Norse. I think it's Norse mythology that has the Ragnarok.
Yeah, it's Norse.
Kind of doomsday Norse plot. So, mm-hmm.
Well, again, I don't even think that it's history to the Romulans. I think that even to the Romulans, they consider this mythology. That's why they were saying that, oh, yeah, I know this part and I know a little bit about this, but, oh, hey, did you hear about all this really horrible, shitty ass stuff that makes it even worse? And it's like, oh, yeah, but it's just mythology. Well, no, it could be history.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, to kind of solidify your point a little more, it's, you know, Narek kind of sees it more as history, more history or historical facts versus mythology, while Ilnor sees it more as mythology rather than history. It's, you know, like talking about the boogeyman versus talking about actual facts.
Yeah. Well,
and then, but you again, know, that's two Romulans.
Yeah, that's true. But you also have to take into account that we have similar accounts in our history. I mean, the lost city of Troy was considered to be mythology, just rumors, myth, until it was discovered to be true. And, well, yeah, you mean, know, I have a feeling that Atlantis is the exact same. I feel like Atlantis was actually a city. It was somewhere, and then it was washed away in a great flood, and now it's considered a myth until we find it.
Well, yeah, it very well could be, and, you know, but like I said, you go talk to anybody on this earth, you're going to get one opinion. You go talk to someone else, you might get another opinion. It just, it varies.
Oh, yeah, and it would do it's the, as it would clear be the as same mud. Here. Yeah, that's true. But it doesn't mean it can't. It's not possible.
No, and I don't disagree with you at all. It's just one perspective might say it's, you know, this is bullshit. Nothing like this ever happened. And then one perspective is like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's enough on the Ragnarok. But it's a very dark and grim explanation of the details that he gives on the past accounts.
You know, when she blows a blast on the horn, it will unleash all the Chahalagul who have been waiting since the beginning of time. You know the sky will crack, and through the crack in the sky, the Chahalagul will come ravening. You know about the thousand days of pain. You know the streets will be slick with entrails of half-devoured corpses. You know the worlds will burn, and the Chahalagul will feast and nurse their brats on blood and pick their teeth with bones. No, we did not know any of that.
So after this, we kind of get the plan starts to unfold. You kind of, you see on the Lost Arena, you get the four of them being Narek, Rafi, Rios, and Elnor plotting out how they're going to sneak back into Synthville and what their plan is to destroy it. And that's when Narek's like, I got grenades, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, great, but that's not going to get past their sensors. Until it was Rios' bright idea. He's like, well, we gotta disguise them. We gotta hide them in something non-metallic. Something that won't set off their sensor. So what do?
They put it in a fucking soccer ball.
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe to him he would call it a football, but this is America. We call it a fucking soccer ball.
And that's their bright idea, which isn't a bad plan. The only flaw... No. That I think someone had was, how do they expect them to just walk in the front door? He's like, well, you're going to come in hand with the secret agent who killed one of their own.
Who, yep.
It's like, that could work. That would work. Okay.
And cool. It did.
And then on three, ready, break. So that, you know, in the next...
Well, and then, well, the next scene, we kind of switch over to Dr. Sung. This entire time, he's developing another synthetic organism that he plans to transfer his mind into, and that he can become a synthetic organism. And right as he finishes creating the new synth body, he gets the notification of the video footage of how the android died. I don't remember the name of her, but the one that Narek was partially responsible for killing, and to find out that the other Soji lookalike android, what's her name? God damn, we need to figure
Sutra.
Out these. Sutra, thank you. That
Sutra, one I had to go and look up.
Yeah, so Sutra was responsible for her death, and then Sung kind of flipped, caught them, said, hey, I'm going to help you because Sutra kind of betrayed us and killed one of her own. Didn't actually tell him that, but that's what he did.
Yeah, because, you know, when the group of four sneaks back onto the camp, Soon kind of overhears them plotting of how they could, you know, destroy the transponder. And he's like, I'm in. I'm down. Let's do this shit, motherfucker.
Well, I like how in the scene where they're coming up with this in-depth plan and they're all the teammates are they're going through, they're putting together intricate plan, and then Girardi manages to steal one of the android's eyes and uses it to get into Picard's room. And what is Picard doing? He's taking a nap.
Yeah.
Well, universe is about to end and Picard's taking a cat nap.
There's things in this episode that just don't fit. And Picard's like, or Girardi's like, Picard, you're obviously awake, Picard. So just say something the first time she says your name, not wait there like you're dead or sleeping or passed out because you got hammered. and are trying to sleep off a hangover. It's just
Picard's not you, Steve.
Well, you know what I'm saying. They play it like he's laying there, and they make her say his name several times when it's just unnecessary.
Well, I mean, maybe he was actually taking a nap, and he woke up the first time, and he's like, "Why are you still yelling at me?"
If you're waking me up in the nap, make it look like he's taking a nap more instead of resting his eyes and being like, "No, I'm still awake, or I'm still alive, I'm still here."
Well, I mean, he
is dying, but it could have been played out a little better.
A little bit.
I don't know. Maybe that's nitpicking. Maybe that's just
a bit
minor flaw that I found that I didn't like. But there's several of them in this episode, which we'll touch on later. But
let's keep moving along. So,
well, now we're talking about the Fearsome Foursome. Interesting name. The group of four who was plotting on the Lost Arena are now kind of executing their plan.
Right.
Which is apparently to cause a minor distraction and then throw a grenade in the center of the transponder like it's supposed to blow it up. But it's surrounded by androids who have wicked fast reflexes.
Yes, and Soji just so happens to catch it.
And then of all things, he throws it right by the head of Soji, where she literally just has to throw her hand up and snatch it.
I know. It just literally went right into her hand.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't make it any more easier for her. Okay, now what I'm curious about is, because I don't remember, how did Picard and Girardi manage to get to the ship while this was all happening? Did they just, like, run to the ship real fast, or how did they get to that ship?
I feel like...
Because remember, Picard's old.
In my headcanon, so the group of four coming from the Lost Arena was en route to Synthville. At the same time, Girardi and Picard were en route from Synthville to Lost Arena. And maybe they took different routes, which is why they didn't cross paths. But that's kind of how I took it.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
If that's the case, I don't really know. But that was crossed my mind briefly. And that was my brief explanation that they were traveling at the same time.
Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense. So apparently Picard, just being able to watch Rios over the past pilot the ship, it managed to pick up everything needed to pilot the ship, in which he apparently knew nothing about a couple episodes ago, but now he's capable, just from watching him, to fly the ship and pilot it against an entire Romulan fleet.
Yeah, the thing about that bugged me about this scene is they're 1 year shy of the 25th century. I feel like there could have been some sort of voice command or something that could have automatic pilot that could have taken him into orbit, and then he could have manually worked his way into position wherever he needed to be.
I mean, I've restarted watching The Next Generation again, and I'm about 9 episodes through the first season, and I was watching the episode where Damon Bach, the Ferengi, was trying to kill Picard. And literally, he programmed the Stargazer, his old ship, in which he thought was destroyed, but it turns out it wasn't. And he managed to reprogram it to where it completely followed his orders, and whatever he told the computer to do, it would respond to him, to make it seem like he was still back on his old ship and fuck with his memory. So, I mean, you can do it 30, 40 years ago, but now you can't do it nowadays?
Yeah, you think there'd be something where he could just be like, hey, computer, take us into a low orbit or a high orbit, or take us, you know, just get us out of here.
Yeah, and it's something they do regularly on Star Trek, on all the Star Treks.
Or, better yet, he could have brought up the emergency navigational system and told that to fly it.
Right. And they know, the holograms know what he looks like, so they're going to respond to him and listen to his commands.
Yeah, and and that was something I didn't even think about until now, because that's another, they could have just gone that route instead of having the struggle of him trying to fly the ship out on his own.
I think there's something important that we got to remember with this stuff. It's Hollywood. They're trying to entertain us, not, they don't actually have a sense of logic and reasoning on what people would actually do if this shit would actually happen.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, the only argument you could play is you're in a stressful situation. Sometimes you don't have time to think through all the alternatives, but I mean, I guess that's a somewhat decent argument, but you could.
But it's Picard. One of the greatest leaders to have ever lived in human history, according to the Star Trek universe.
But his mind slipping, according to his, and I hate how they do this, it's his brain abnormality. There's no diagnosis. There's no, you know, official name for it. It's just according to his brain abnormality. Another pet peeve of mine that's been driving me nuts. You know, he could have made up some name for the fucking abnormality. Abnormality. Yes.
There you go. Third time's a charm, brother.
Minor things like that. That's the kind of shit that kind of killed me through this season.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that I've been saying this entire season, that obviously the writers tried to indulge Star Trek fans in obvious ways, but don't actually understand how Star Trek works. So they're missing, you know, when they mess up, they're messing up in obvious ways. That's, mm-hmm. you know, fairly obvious to even, you know, not even huge Trekkies, just a casual fan are noticing these differences.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, but now that Girardi and Picard are in space, they're just waiting, you know, they're trying to hatch a plan, find a way to stall, hoping that Starfleet would come to the rescue. Romulans are barreling down on them 7 minutes out, according to long-range sensors, and they're trying to figure out this plan, and their best idea is to use the magic wand fixer-upper to create as many imaginary ships as possible and stall the Romulan fleet.
Yeah, but I feel like you were, because we were talking about this earlier, and I feel like you're mad because of how they got to that logic, because I think Girardi was talking about how, oh, if you could pull this shit off, you know, you'd be the greatest pilot, they name a maneuver out of you, and it's like, oh, wait, they did. They named the Picard maneuver, which is the same episode that I was actually talking about earlier, is where they first mentioned the Picard maneuver, where basically the Picard maneuver is you go into high warp, warp 9, and you go set the coordinates right under the ship's hull or basically the front of the ship. So you kick it into high warp, and you're moving so fast at the speed of light that the sensors confuse it to where it thinks you're in two places at once, and they don't know where to fire, and if they fire at the wrong spot, they're fucked, and you're dead. And that's basically the Picard mover, and he's like, well, it doesn't really work here. And then magic wand, but wait, we have a magic wand. Now we can do it and trick everybody and think we have a million ships when we really don't.
Yeah. Felt like a lazy way to stall the Romulans.
I don't know. They've done that before in Star Trek.
They've pulled up a magic wand and created 1,000 ships out of thin air.
Not exactly. So they didn't create 1,000 ships out of thin air. They used little mirrors to create holograms, or basically like holograms of the ships. And in Star Trek Voyager, they did something similar to where they put holographic projectors on the outside of the ship, and they projected a bunch of other ships to distract, you know, attacking vessels and confuse them. So it's something that Voyager has done before.
Yeah, and that's one thing, is using the resources you have at hand, you know, already on the well, I know I'm going to get ridiculed for how I'm phrasing this, but it's using your wit and ingenuity to come up with a solution, taking stuff you already have on the ship, turning it into something else for your advantage, versus, I got a magic fucking wand, let's just create some shit out of thin air. You know, Harry Potter, hocus pocus, this motherfucker, 10,000 ships, Aramis. That's their distraction, it is what it is. So Soji sends up the space orchids to, and you know, kudos to them, because I guess apparently they had 5.
Well, no, they had 10
in the middle.
They
lost 5. Well, they had a hell of well. So they had 10 at the end of last episode, and it looks like they probably had 20.
Yeah, they had a lot more. They managed to make more. I'm curious how many ships they took out.
It didn't look like they took any. I mean,
yeah, they did. They took out a couple. The tails, if you watch the tails, when they whip them, it would just completely destroy the ships. Yeah. But again, yeah, the 218 Romulan warbirds, or I'm sorry, war boobs, my bad. So the the 218 Romulan war boobs are a lot for, you know, the orchids to handle. So So they lost pretty quickly, but they did take out a couple ships.
It's 10 times their force. You could have 10 ships aiming at one Orchid. So it's the numbers were heavily in the Romulans' favor. So saw that going that way. That was probably bottom another 10 minutes, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, here's something cool that I noticed that it was just details of the CGI. So they showed a shot of all the Romulan war boobs popping up into the atmosphere from the planet's perspective. So they can all see all the war boobs coming in into the atmosphere. And I'm thinking, man, what if that actually happened in real life? You know, could we – you see Imperial Star Destroyers, just thousands of them popping up in our atmosphere one day. And how would that look? You know, would it actually look like that? And I just thought that was really cool.
I was thinking about the same thing during that scene, and a part of me was like, could you see it? Because the way it's shot from the ground up into the sky kind of makes it look like they're within the atmosphere. But looking at it from space, it looks like they're in a pretty high orbit. So obviously we don't know what that's going to look like, because we've never seen starships this massive kind of in a low planetary orbit.
And you gotta remember, there's hundreds of them.
Yeah, so I feel like they should be able to be seen with the naked eye, but I don't feel like that was how it was represented in the show. I feel like they should have been a little bit further away, just based on, you know, I mean, just based on kind of how you saw the scene from space, they look like they were a little bit out there.
Well, you gotta keep in mind, it's not exact, but think about it, like 3/4 of a kilometer is one warbird, is like the length and is the dimensions of a warbird. Pretty much just think 1/4 square kilometer. So it's pretty big. And to have 207 of them, and they're going to be directly over your position, because that's the only, it's Sin City. Synth City, I'm sorry. So yes, they're all going to be over one spot. So I think you would be able to see them.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. I think you would be able to see them. I'm just not sure if the two shots properly reflect of how it would look from the ground versus, you know, they just look like they were in a higher orbit or kind of further away from the planet in the space scenes, right, versus looking at it on the ground. They look like they were still in the atmosphere, kind of seeing, for example, if a Romulan warbird was at 35 or 40,000 feet.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm kind of getting at. It feels like contrasting perspectives from the ground versus in space. But I don't know, like I said, without actually seeing a ship that size in that type of orbit, you know, who knows? It could be spot on for all we know.
Yeah, that's true. But then again, we can't see our satellites today.
Yeah, but our satellites are tiny. It's like a semi-truck, a semi-truck with trailer in space.
But I think it would be agreed that if we had an Imperial Star Cruiser, like, pop up in our Earth orbit, we would be able to see that. That's big enough. Because that's going to be about 5-6 times the size of a warbird. So that'd be pretty freaking huge.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's just, you know, we have nothing to compare it to.
Right.
Maybe one day. No, we probably won't. Maybe a couple lifetimes from now.
Yeah, you never know. We're moving pretty fast, so.
Let's talk about the rest of this episode, because after all the Orchids go down, Picard is scrambling. You know, Picard and Girardi are scrambling. They're trying to find a new plan. We need a stall. And Starfleet pops up out of nowhere in between the warbirds and the planet. And I feel like the way they're positioned, it kind of seemed like Starfleet would have to go through the planet, not all of them, but at least some of them, to get into that position. So that felt a little off too, but I'm not saying it. I mean, with such advanced technology, you could have programmed your computers to come right above the planet and then drop you in between.
You could turn around the planet.
Yeah,
you know, that was one of the things that they talked about a lot in, you know, season one of Star Trek, and then season in Voyager, was the ability to, you know, turn while traveling at warp speed. Because, you know, with warp speed, you can't actually turn. You have to go in a straight line. You want to change directions, stop, turn the ship, point in the right direction, and then start again. So maybe they corrected that.
Maybe so. I'm just saying, it just felt, I mean, it felt like they would, like I said, it would feel like they would have to go through the planet, but probably can get away with that one a little bit for the sake of Hollywood theatrics.
Yeah, probably.
The thing that bugged me about this the most is when Starfleet jumped out, it was never mentioned. It came out of surprise, came out of nowhere. Like, they should have picked it up. Everyone, the Romulans, Picard, should have picked it up on long-range sensors. They probably could have had, like, a 10-minute warning that incoming Starfleet ships, unless Starfleet has the ability to master warp signatures so long-range sensors can't pick it up.
I mean, they could. I feel like it was just something that the directors wanted to do to build suspense. Like, oh, look, we came in the nick of time. Like, you didn't already know we would.
Surprise! The Cialis kicked in. So that was the thing, another inconsistency with the story that bugged me a little bit. It was, they should have picked him up on long range.
True. But I mean, it was nice to see, you know, Captain Riker in command of the starship. One of the things that I noticed that this new class of ship, I don't know anything about this new ship that they were talking about. It kind of looked like an Intrepid, like a Intrepid class starship, like a similar design, similar to Voyager, but almost like a modified version. So
it almost looked like if you took Voyager and clashed it with Enterprise E. If you had a baby with those two ships is kind of how
almost
it appeared to me.
Yeah, it kind of did, because Voyager had a bit more of smaller warp nacelles and a little bit bigger of a head, where Enterprise was a little bit longer of a head and longer nacelles, and it does kind of have that combination of the two.
Yeah, the only thing is, I remember Voyager's ship kind of looking like a football, the front end.
A little bit.
This one was more, I would say, ovaler, but not really. It was just a little bit bigger. But yeah, I think it's a good, you know, if you were to stretch out the hull of Voyager, slap that on to the Enterprise E, that's kind of the new ship that they're looking at. I mean, I feel like I'm just talking about what bugged me in this episode versus what I liked in this episode.
I know. There's a lot of good scenes in this episode, too, or there's a lot of good part.
But it just seemed like, I mean, Starfleet brought in 200 of the exact same class of ship.
Why not? If it's the best top-of-the-line shit, why not?
It could have been. And that's the thing. I mean, it's like, okay, I know you're scrambling your fleet, but I feel like it would have been an all-hands-on situation, and I'm pretty sure not every ship is going to be the same design. Now, granted, I didn't pause the scene and look at every ship on the screen, but from
different ships.
Okay, because from what I could tell, it was probably 95% that new starship.
Yeah, it was mostly. I even thought about that when watching it. Like, are all these ships identical, or are there some different ones in there? And I think what they were doing is they were rebuilding their fleet after the losses of the Dominion War. Because they'd lost probably 2,000 ships in the war with the Dominion. So they lost a lot of ships. So they're probably building whole new fleets, and they have all new modified ships or all new up-to-date advanced latest and greatest. And they just managed to build a massive fleet of it. So why not send your top of the line shit to combat the Romulan fleet?
Like I said, it just seemed like one of those. I would have liked to see more obvious variety. Like I said, if you paused it and looked at each ship individually, yeah, there's some different ones in there, slightly different designs, but you know, a majority of them just seem like they made one concept and then copy and pasted. All right, we got about 200 ships on screen. Well, that'll do.
Well, and then you also got to remember, it's been 30 years since Enterprise or the Next Generation. So you're going to have a lot of changes in ships designs, and it'd be complicated coming up with brand new ship designs. And it does, if they were diligent about wanting to continue the storyline with it, they would have done it. But I feel like they were just lazy and they didn't really want to put the time or effort that's involved with.
Yeah. And another question that rose to my mind is Captain Riker took over as acting captain of this flagship. I think it was the Jing Yi. Something like that. It's like, okay, two questions. Did this ship have a captain prior to Riker requesting a transfer or, you know, reassignment? And if so, where is said captain? If not, why didn't they have a captain? And, you know, is this its maiden voyage?
Okay, let's think. So the way that Picard explained it, was he was reserve Starfleet, and he activated, he was in the reserves for Starfleet, and he activated himself as captain. He was an admiral before he went reserves. So if he was admiral and requested a promotion of captain and they gave him the ship, it makes sense they might give him temporary command since, you know, it's former 3-4 pin admiral. I was going to say star, but they don't have stars. He wants to captain a ship. You know, he was an admiral. He's got every right to do that. So if there was a captain, he would be obliged to step down, especially for a former admiral who's commanding an entire fleet.
Okay, rebuttal. A lot of times there is a ship in a fleet. Talking Starfleet and just my very simplistic naval understanding, where an admiral is in command. Mm-hmm. So why, and especially in Discovery, you know, there's the admiral ship. So why not just come in as a brief, you know, an acting admiral, and he can be on an admiral, ship that he's in command of? Why would he take over someone's ship, have them not step down as captain, but just move to first officer temporarily?
Because there's nothing quite like being captain of a starship. It's the same reason why James Kirk, when he became an admiral in the movies, hated being an admiral and loved the idea of receiving a demotion to become captain again, because there's just nothing like being a captain.
Right, but I'm saying, you know, specifically for this mission, he could have been probably the lowest ranking acting admiral, could have had his own ship that he was in command of, and left whoever was commanding this flagship in command, and still handled the situation. And, you know, it would have been all the responsibilities of the captain plus some of an admiral.
Well, probably because, one, he was getting old. So he is a former admiral, still in reserves, probably at the back end of his reserves time. And they're like, hey, I want to do one more mission. Let me command this fleet. My old captain asked for my help. Just give me a temporary command of captain. Let me take over the flagship. Let me do this. And then I'll, you know, go back to reserves when this whole conflict is over.
But we're probably overanalyzing this. Well, we're definitely overanalyzing this.
Oh, we're completely overanalyzing it. You know why? Because we missed an important part. We skipped it way long ago. So 7 of 9 runs into Rizzo on the Borg cube. And that's something that we skipped, to where they actually get into a fight. 7 disarms or captures Rizzo. And Rizzo starts fighting back, disarms her, and they get into a big fight. And she's like, why are you even alive? Why didn't you just take your life? You're just a mutant XB filth, blah, 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 insulting 7. Just pissing her off even more. And 7 kills, I'm going to go with air quotes, kills Rizzo by kicking her off the Borg ledge. And supposedly she fell to her death. Now, I say air quotes because, you know, this chick is pretty freaking badass, and it's not beyond the realm of possibility that she could have gone full Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow, and pulled something out of her tool bag and saved herself by having a nylon thread, catching it, hooking onto it, swinging from a ledge, and getting onto another one.
Yeah. You know, I didn't imagine that. How I imagine is, she probably still has her emergency transporter, so she might have emergency transported on the way down.
Yeah, that seems a little bit more plausible.
Because, you know, like I said, that's a little more consistent. And I think, you know, we've seen it twice where she's escaped danger in the nick of time by an emergency transport.
So yeah, that's true.
I don't disagree with her possibly still being alive. I guess I disagree with how she probably went about doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be surprised if you see her pop up again in season 2. You should be like, hey, plot twist, I'm still alive.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think you'll see her or Narek in season 2 because they both kind of served their purpose. And season 2 kind of needs to go in a different route. And I think that route doesn't really involve those two being the antagonist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she could be dead because, you know, there might not be a need for her in future seasons.
Maybe, but it seems like an unsatisfying way to end her character. I feel like there's a lot of direction that they could go with it in season two when Narek finds out that his sister is dead, that Seven killed her. And especially since, you know, we'll get to it more when the episode ends, but it looks like Seven might be sticking around the crew for a little bit. And yeah. I feel like you're just setting it up for a great opportunity to bring her back in the next storyline. And this Star Trek has not been shy in gruesome deaths. So why would they not show it if she was dead?
I don't know. Probably because she was more of a main recurring character versus a super minor character.
Yeah, but it'd be more satisfying to watch her die if, you know, because she's kind of a bitch, so.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
But, yeah, I mean, that was an important part that we kind of missed, so I kind of wanted to get back to that. And I guess now we can kind of get caught back up.
You know, we got so caught up in the space action that was happening that we kind of just kind of lumped everything that was happening with Picard in space together and blew through a couple scenes. But besides that one scene where Seven kills Rizzo, those scenes weren't too important. I mean, the only other thing is that, you know, Loki opens up the portal to bring in the Chitauri. Soji opens up the portal to bring in the synth army to destroy everything.
I know. I noticed that too.
something like that.
Yeah, it's the only difference was this one was red.
Yeah, and that scepter's around there somewhere. I know that's an emergency shutoff key, so that'll happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, I see you, Loki. I see you.
Mm-hmm.
You tricky little bastard.
Hey, maybe that's the direction they go with the new Loki series.
Maybe. You never know.
Mm-hmm. And then Picard manages to talk Soji into shutting down the device by offering his own life and talking about how the Federation did not abandon them since they are fighting and ready to defend the Siths from the Romulans rather than turn to help destroy them. And it worked. So, of course, Picard's speeches save the day because it's Picard.
Yeah, it was very fitting to the way a lot of TNG would end where Picard talks people down. I feel like it's very important for a lot of Starfleet and former Starfleet captains to talk people down versus, you know, action being the solution. But it felt very anticlimactic on a series that has been kind of big on the scale of action for a sci-fi type drama.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It was fitting for the character of Picard, but it was unsatisfactory for the show, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I would agree because that's what Picard would do. Like, he is known for his inspirational speeches. So I feel like if there was a way that this would end, that would be the way to end it.
Yeah. And that's how he does end it. And then, you know, good thing, because his brain abnormality starts acting up again, and, you know, and this time it's too much for him to handle and ends up dying.
Yep.
And then, you know, you kind of get the sense of, you know, watching it, I was like, okay, maybe he's really dead. Maybe there's no season two. Came back for one quick, you know, season one miniseries, and that's it. It's the end of Picard. But
yeah, you should know better.
But no.
You know, shows have a tendency of announcing season two way before they even get started with their first season and set it up to where, you think, maybe they won't have a new season this time. Maybe he's really dead, just like you're thinking. And then, oh, wait, no, we know that they've already announced a season two a couple months ago, so it doesn't really matter. That's one of the things that pisses me off is when they do that.
Yeah, and I think I might have liked the finale a little better if that's how it ended. If it ended with, because, you know, Seven and Rios were talking, having a heart-to-heart. Seven regrets killing Rizzo because she didn't want to take any more lives. Rios kind of got close to Picard and, you know, ended up watching another old Starfleet captain die, which he promised he didn't want to do again. Elnor breaks down and Raffi's there to comfort him. And I feel like that might have been a better way to end it, or find another way to end on a happier note versus the way we got. After this, you get a scene where Picard is what it appears to be a dream, because he's sitting in his study, a grayed out version of his study with Data, and they're having a conversation.
Right.
And he asks, am I dead? And Data's like, yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where you could have ended it, where they're having a heart-to-heart, Picard seeing Data one last time. You get a little choking up because you're like, you're seeing your good old pal Data again.
Yeah, and then it, I don't know how I felt about that. Data, when he died in Nemesis, it was very unsatisfying because you really didn't want to see him go. Everybody loved the character, and it kind of broke their heart to see him go like that. But if you're going to go, that's the way to go. And it felt like they're bringing back up a tough character death and exacerbating it for the end of this episode. And it almost seems a little unnecessary because it's the way that they explain it, that the simulation that they're in is the final few fragments of Data's neural patterns that was transferred before he did that into B4. B4 is being the name of the android, his brother, that he transferred all of his memories into. For anybody who didn't know. So these are the last remaining fragments, and that's the simulation that he's in. And then when Picard realizes that he's in the simulation, Data explains it, and then it's like, yeah, you're dead, but I know what's going on, and they are actually going to transfer your remaining consciousness that they have preserved in here with me, and they're going to transfer it into the synth body that Dr. Shum was going to make for himself, saving your life. So it was kind of a predictable end for that.
Yeah, and you can, and our listeners can't see it, but I was shaking my head the whole time because I was like, no. And I was like, this scene that started out with Data was nice, and it was a nice scene, but like you said, it takes away from his death in Nemesis, which I think was a better way for him to go. And I was just shaking my head because I was like, oh, what are they doing here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was more satisfying for Brett Spinner, but not for Star Trek fans.
And then they dropped the ball. Oh, they're transferring your conscious into another android. And it's like, oh, great. Oh, my God.
Well, they got to continue the season somehow.
Okay. All right. I was like, okay, let's see how they explain this. And then they explain it. I'm like, oh. So you transfer his mind into a synthetic body that has an algorithm to let him live the life expectancy he would have had if he didn't have this brain abnormality.
Oh my God. Abnormality. If he didn't have
this brain abnormality, and you know, everything's the same. He won't have super strength. He won't have super reflexes. He's an android. He's a human. God, I don't even know how I'm going to word this. He's an android that's human. He's a fake human. He's a false human.
Pretty much.
Dr. Song was like, everything works, you know, all your stuff's good. And I would have been like, is my dick the same size? Is it bigger?
Yeah, could you add an extension version to where it's like a twist to where it gets longer as you twist it? Like,
is this, you know?
Oh man, which reminds
could
me.
Could this be a couple inches? I know you said it's fully functional, but I could use a couple more inches. And also, it would have been nice if you could add 20 more years so I can got some action with this new dong.
Yeah, at least make me look a little bit younger so I'd be better with the ladies, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Sung should have added a vibrating function to it.
I know. That's what he should have asked.
Hell, everyone just starts vibrating. Yeah, that was interesting because, you know, I've seen this finale. I think I watched it twice a day, so the three times total. And I didn't catch that Rafi and Seven start holding hands at the end of it.
Well, I mean, it was...
Which I called, I was like, I think Seven churned by at some point in her life. And boom, there it is. Ball drops. Steven called it, whoop, whoop, happy dance.
I think what probably happened was she just got drunk as hell, hooked up with the chick, ended up liking it, and stuck with it.
Hey, that happens to some people. Nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you also see Girardi and Rios kiss, and it's just like the La Serena has become a bang pad. It's Swinger City in there. It should be La Swingers.
And then are we just going to ignore the fact that Girardi murdered someone, her last guy that she banged?
Right?
Like,
right?
We're just going to ignore that?
Right?
Like, okay, she was under the influence of Romulan Vulcan commander going crazy that think the universe might end, but still, like, she was a murderer. She did commit murder.
Yeah, mind blown a little bit. Yeah, valid, very valid point.
So,
totally forgot about that. I don't know how, but I totally forgot about that.
Uh-huh. Apparently so did the writers.
Interested to see how that plays out, you know, because they're all happy dandy, like nothing's going. Wow, valid point. Yep, valid point. Well, let's talk about one more point, and it's Data request that Picard pull his memory chips and essentially kill Data, because Data's ready to die. He's like, life doesn't have meaning unless it's finite, and he's like, I just want my life to end in a way, not exactly like that. So, you know, Data makes
wants to have meaning in the remainder of his life.
Yeah, and he wants to be as human as possible, and in order to do that, his life has to be finite. So he asks Picard, he goes, whenever you get out of here, please let me go.
It was very, again, reminded me of Avengers, but instead of the first Avengers, reminded me of the second Avengers with Vision. You know, something's not beautiful because it lasts, and it's something similar to the Data said in this conversation with Picard, and it's like, what's with these androids finding beauty in things that don't last? I mean, it's not wrong, but still, that's something I just noticed.
You get a nice little scene where, you know, as they're pulling out the chips, there's a simulation of Picard sitting there while Data's laying down, and Data ages. He goes from, you know, what looks like a 60-year-old android to 90 or 100-year-old android, and then Thanos snaps him away, and then he floats off into nothingness.
Yeah, like dust in the wind.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, I think the death takes away from Nemesis, but I won't take away the credit of how the scene played out, because it was very touching and nice, and it was a very fitting scene, maybe for those people who haven't seen Nemesis. I mean, they had Blue Skies playing in the background, the song that opened up the season.
It was also the episode for Nemesis as well.
It was sung in Nemesis, and it was a beautiful addition of the song, and it was very touching. It tugged at the heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah, and then you have a young Picard there, and basically Data, when he was passing, he just laid on the couch, and Picard essentially almost tucked him in as he passed away, or as he started to vanish, and that, you know, he saw Picard there with him at his deathbed.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very touching scene.
It was very touching. Like I said, I mean, his death in this, we'll say, throw quotes around it, kind of takes away from the Nemesis one, but like I said, you got to give credit where credit's due. It was a very touching scene.
Yeah, I mean, and I hate to say it, we spent pretty much most of this episode bashing or really critiquing it, but it was actually one of the better episodes this season, in my opinion. My opinion.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Well, you have a lot of critiques.
Well, let's go into our overall opinions. We'll give it. This will be a little different since it's a finale of a season we're going over. So we'll talk about an episode opinion, and then we'll give a brief season overview opinion. So, Chris, why don't you go ahead and do a quick episode opinion?
I actually thought this was a better episode than the previous ones. I know that this one had a lot of faults, but there was a lot of really good moments that we didn't really get to talk about. We were kind of focused on critiquing of it, and then we got really into some of the things that we didn't even really notice. It's like pretty obvious flaws, but again, the acting was really good, except for the crying scene, because, you know, actors like to overdo the crying scenes. But the acting was really good. The storyline was pretty good. The writing was decent in some spots, tragic in others, but I think the episode was actually pretty interesting, and it was good to see really good CGI, really good graphics. You know, the ships looked great, and I was really excited to see this huge ass fucking space battle, but I was a little disappointed that it didn't have it. Oh well. But I thought this was a pretty good episode. I thought this was one of the better episodes this season, and it was an interesting finale.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I might throw some opinions out there that you're not expecting.
Okay.
So this episode overall, decent. This episode as a finale was very meh, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. For the first 20 minutes, which is little less than half the episode, I was unintrigued. There wasn't much there to grab my attention, and I just, you know, and I feel like a finale should kind of leave you on the edge. It should have you on the edge of your seat, like in anticipation of what might happen. And I just, first 20 minutes felt lackluster, and the next few minutes, kind of when Picard finally gets it up into space and they're trying to figure out what the hell they're going to do, the suspense builds a little more, and you feel it a little better, and the episode kind of picks up a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks Soji down, and it was just like fitting for the character, but not for the season they've had so far.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt meh. And then kind of stepping over Data's original death in Nemesis with this death, while the scenes were very touching and kind of pulled at the heartstrings a little bit, it didn't sit right. So overall, in my opinion, the finale's meh. I didn't like that they made him a synthetic now. That's just I don't know if that's unpopular opinion or if that's kind of the consensus with Star Trek fans. I've only talked to not even a handful, like one or two other fans who share some similarities, but not really all of them. So that's just my opinion. Take it how it is.
Let me kind of go into my overall opinion of the season. You know, as a season, I actually didn't really like it. It was kind of a balance of polar opposites. The great moments were great. The bad moments were really bad. And therefore, it was a decent show because it had that balance. And it was one of the things to where, again, I think there's lazy writing behind a lot of it. I think they were trying to appease Star Trek fans. They didn't. And then they piss a lot of Star Trek fans off by saying, yeah, we're not really doing it for Star Trek fans. And then it's like, well, why the fuck are you even doing this then? You know, so there was just so many different aspects to it. Not only just this one, but there was a lot of similar criticisms about Discovery that it's not continuous with the canon storyline. And it just doesn't make sense. And there's a lot of things that just doesn't make sense, doesn't work. And we notice it. And it's these little things that drive us really crazy. Because if you notice, we spent this entire show talking about little, probably insignificant minutiae details that really didn't do much to the storyline, but were pretty glaring or obvious holes. So it was an interesting, heartfelt, touchy-feeling ones. It's almost like to bring you nostalgia of back what you were missing with Picard, not being, you know, around anymore. You know, that they were trying to appease these fans to bring back this nostalgia, and I feel like they failed. So I would probably give it a 3 out of 10.
Damn.
If I were to rank, this as a season, as a real true Star Trek fan, I'm going to go, it needs some work, and I want to see how they improve next season. What do you think about the season, though?
I'll start off with this. I was really excited to see this series. When it was announced, I was really excited watching the trailers. I was actually kind of into the first 3 episodes, and then it tailed off and started to lose me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if this show wasn't a Star Trek show with the same plot and had things play out in a very similar way, minus the nostalgia feeling, great potential for a sci-fi show. Great tech, great futuristic shit going on, but I think like you said, as a Trek show, it fails. It just doesn't hit home with Trek. You know, me being a casual Trek fan, it didn't hit home with me compared to watching TNG, most of the original series. It just feels off.
Yeah.
And part of it is the continuous storyline for the 10 episodes, you know, all being interconnected. I don't think I would give it the harsh 3 out of 10, but I'd put it right down the middle at 5.
I thought about going with 5, but there was a lot more that I didn't like than I liked.
Yeah. So what do you want to see improved in season 2? What, I know you touched on it a little bit, but what would, besides writing and you know, kind of keeping it more consistent with Trek type canon and feel. What do you want to see from season two?
I want to see different storylines for the season. And when I say that, I mean, I don't want one continuous storyline for a 10-episode season. I want a 20-episode season that has different storylines per episode, or maybe even like two or three, to where there's, you know, story arcs along the season to where it feels like Star Trek again. That's what I really would love to see. And then I want to see, you know, again, you touched on some of it to where the more minute details. One of the storylines that I would actually like for Next Generation to touch on is one that they go over in the first season, and they go over twice. And it's the episode to where these little like bugs infect Starfleet and all levels of Starfleet. And I don't think they ever actually gave the name of what the species was. Now that I think
about it. No, because the episode you're talking about is, I think it is season one.
There's like two. Said,
these bugs come out of some unknown quadrant, and Starfleet, I think, tries to make contact via radio waves or subspace. So they send out signals to this unknown region of space.
Right.
Like they were going to come back to it, but as far as I know, never did.
Yeah, they set up the storyline to where they could come back to it later. Because they sent out that message and supposedly somebody received it. So if it was me, I would like to see that storyline, because that was one of the storylines that we never got to see again.
Yeah. And I think it could be one of those, you know, you bring back, it opens the door to bring back some original TNG characters, because you Starfleet might want to consult the people who were directly involved with that incident. And what better way to have an excuse to bring back like Crusher and LaForge and Worf and, and all these people, even if it's just minor consulting.
Right. And then you can make the claim that, you know, they infiltrated Starfleet the first time. Maybe they done it again. And that's why we had so many different problems with the synth ban, why things kind of seem to go to shit in the Federation in the past couple, you know, 20 years. You know, maybe they could explain it that way and then have it to where you have these story arcs for different storylines, and then the main story arc is this problem, and then they reveal to it and deal with it in the last couple of episodes. You know what I mean?
I think that would be a good way to take season two. I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah, I think that would be a great way to do it, but I don't think they're going to do it.
Yeah, doubt it.
Because it's a good idea. All right, what about you? What are your expectations for season two?
And I just would like to see a little better writing, a little more consistency. And I like the storyline that you just brought up. I think that's a good way to go with season two. I can't think of another way of going about it besides that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's other ways, but...
There is, but it's like, there's not another way I can think of where I would rather it go, at least not right now, than that.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat it.
Punch it,
kill
it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
All right, well, I guess now that we're finished with Star Trek Picard, what do we got to look forward to now, Steve?
Well, I think as we announced last week, next time on Deep Space High, people can look forward to us going over The Mandalorian.
Yes.
This is a title I'm looking forward to, because me being a Star Wars geek and knowing a lot about Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Jedi Master Steve.
I'm excited to get into this show, and seen it before, but this will be the first time I've watched this since it's wrapped. So it's been 6 months at least. And I think this is fitting, because I'm sure by the time we get these episodes out and then we wrap on season one, there probably won't be much time in between season one and season two. So looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I mean, I loved it watching the first time. I'm looking forward to watching it again the second time. And I love Baby Yoda. Like, it's been out for a while, so everybody knows about Baby Yoda. It was all over the internet. So if you don't know about Baby Yoda, then you're just not on the internet.
True.
So. True. But I mean, that's what I'm mostly looking forward to, and I'm really looking forward to season two as well, because
yeah, a lot of rumors, a lot of new potential characters coming out of season two.
Yeah, I know, it's very exciting.
So at least the next eight weeks of Deep Space High, starting next time, will be episode one of season one, The Mandalorian, yes. Entitled The Mandalorian. I think that'll do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High. Join us next time as we begin our conversation on The Mandalorian.
Yes, and don't forget to keep the conversation going on Twitter with hashtag Tacos and Trek and hashtag Deep Space High.
And let us know how we're doing by reviewing Deep Space High on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please feel free to subscribe and share the show. I'm Jedi Master Steven.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris. And until next time, live long and prosper.